So many of you know now that I really like to use poetry in my talks, and I usually forget till the end that I have the poetry here, but tonight I'm intentionally remembering, and I'm going to start with a poem, which there's two poems. I'm going to start with one, and then I'll end with one later on. This is from Hafiz, who you may be familiar with, was a 13th century, he was in the 1300s, so maybe that's 14th century, Sufi poet who is just wild and quite enlightened. This poem is called "It Happens All the Time in Heaven." It happens all the time in heaven, and someday it will begin to happen again on earth, that men and women who are married, and men who are lovers, and women who give each other light, often will get down on their knees, and while so tenderly holding their lover's hand, with tears in their eyes, will sincerely speak, saying, "My dear, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind?" Wait till you hear the last one. they're both about equal, but Hafiz, absolutely one of my favorites. And the book is called "The Subject Tonight Is Love." It just so happens that that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight too. In the form of loving kindness practice. I've talked a lot about loving kindness practice. It is one of my favorite topics, as well as Judy's, apparently. Many of you know that recently I was on retreat at Spirit Rock for the month of February, and I ended up doing intensive metta practice for the entire month through just sort of happenstance. That was not my original intention. But I wanted to go back a little bit and explain both a little bit about how loving kindness practice fits into the Buddhist teachings and how I got started on that path. What loving kindness practice is it's one of four of the what are called Brahma Viharas, or heavenly abodes, that the Buddha taught. And they are really four facets or flavors of love, being loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Loving kindness and compassion are probably the two that we talk about the most, and they differ just slightly from each other. They're really similar. They're kind of like two sides of the same coin. Loving kindness is the wish for oneself or others to be happy, and that's a very broad-ranging term in this sense. It encompasses safety, well-being, health, joy, I'm blanking out, but a lot of different, any way that you can think of that brings happiness is encompassed by this. So it's the wish for someone to be happy. Compassion, on the other hand, is the wish for someone to be free from suffering. Which you could say that I would include that in the broad definition of happiness, right? To be free from suffering. But it's a little bit different in how it's generated, because when you're feeling compassion for yourself or someone else, you really have to have allowed yourself to touch the suffering first. And then compassion is the natural response of the heart. So in that way, compassion can be a little bit more difficult than loving kindness. Both bring a lot of liberation to the heart and mind. And typically, formal metta practice, formal loving kindness practice, is done with a set of phrases such as, may you be safe and protected, may you be peaceful and happy, may you be strong and healthy, and so on. And then it's done starting with oneself and expanding in wider and wider circles, and until it includes all beings. It can be done just for oneself. That's completely legitimate, and it's not a selfish thing to do because it increases your own capacity to then feel it for others and extend it to others. So probably about 10 or 12 years ago now, I was on a retreat, and for whatever reason, I was experiencing just self-judgment in great boatloads, and really experiencing a lot of aversion to myself and self-loathing. Because I was on a retreat, you know, there was a chance to really explore that. And my mind is a little quirky, and so one morning I woke up, and the image that came to my mind was of a professor at a huge chalkboard in front of a lecture hall in a college classroom saying, "And for today, we'll continue our exploration of self-aversion." It was just like, oh, great. Oh, great. So anyway, I allowed that exploration to unfold. And what happened was I got very much in touch with how painful it is to feel aversion to myself, to oneself. And so a very dear teacher of mine recommended that I do loving kindness practice for myself for a year. And I did that. And I've talked about that in this group before. And it was really powerful. And then since that time, I've really enjoyed loving kindness practice. I've done quite a bit of it, not so much in the formal, well, I've done the formal thing of taking the phrases out to all beings and all that. And I really thought I knew loving kindness practice. I thought, you know, wow, I've done a lot of this. It's been really transformative. And, you know, maybe I never thought this consciously, but it just felt like I was kind of done with it, not needing to do it anymore, you know. So when I got directed in this way on this retreat, it was really interesting for me, because as soon as a teacher said that to me, recommended that I do loving kindness practice as a method of concentration, I got really curious. Like, wow, I had a sense that this could unfold more than I ever thought possible before. So that's kind of what happened. And so I learned a lot of stuff. And yeah, it's kind of weird to talk about it, really. But I started with some very simple phrases, just may I be safe, may I be peaceful, may I be happy, may I be free. And I was doing it only for myself and a benefactor who is a dear teacher of mine. I noticed almost immediately that it was easier to connect with the sense of love for the benefactor than for myself. I could connect it for myself, but I wasn't having a really, really heartfelt and open, and, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm nice, but the benefactor is like, love, right? So that was an interesting thing, because then what happened was, as it unfolded, as I was making these wishes for the benefactor, then I was able to later take that sense of love that I had for that person and direct it back to myself. So, you know, it's never wasted, right? You know, you may have one goal, and it may unfold in kind of a circuitous way, that you are directing it to someone else and then it can come back to you, or you're directing it to person A with the and you find that that's difficult, so you go to person B and it's really easy, and then you can transfer it over to the person who was initially more difficult, perhaps. You know, doing it for a month is, in a way, it's really hard because it gets so dry. The instruction was, you're going to be saying these phrases 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. for a month. And I was like, you mean all I'm going to do on this retreat is say, may you be safe, may you be peaceful, may you be happy, may you be free. May you be safe, may you be peaceful, may you be happy, may you be free. I'm tired of it already. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to imagine what this is going to be like in 10 days, you know. But I knew enough to stay with it. And then the mind can just be really creative. The way it unfolded for myself was, you know, I couldn't quite get there for this being. So I started with myself as a 5-year-old. And I could connect with that being. And then that started to unfold in a very nice way at some point. And then it was like, okay, now I need to get from my 5-year-old to my 59-year-old. So let's do it in stages. So then I, you know, then I went to myself at 9 and 12 and 17 and 21. And kind of picking ages where there were specific events in my life that I could connect to mark myself in time and get a picture of myself. And when I finally got up to like 45 and then had to make the leap to the more present day me, the image that I used of myself was of a picture that was taken of me a year ago on the night that my grandson was born, when I was holding, you know, this newborn baby. The mind can be very creative in how to figure out to make those connections. That's the point I'm trying to make here. And it was kind of the same with the benefactor. I started out envisioning a channel of light from my heart to the benefactor's heart with the benefactor sitting over here, which was very nice, but still a little bit impersonal. And eventually bringing the benefactor straight in front of me so that the connection was more intimate. And then eventually getting to the place where, you know, there was the real moment of heart opening of just spontaneously in my own mind, reaching out to stroke the benefactor's cheek. And immediately in my own mind, I became like a little Tinkerbell being who was, you know, capable of very clandestinely sneaking around and patting people on the cheek and without them knowing it, but somehow, you know, they would feel it. And that was really delightful. So there was this slow unfolding of just using myself and the benefactor for 2.5 weeks of this retreat. And then I started to expand it to wider circles. And you next bring in a dear friend. And I worked with several different dear friends. In the meantime, I was sending, like, I would go to the dining hall and send metta to the people around me. Or I would think of this group and send metta to the people in this group. Or I would think of a Kalyanamita group that I teach and send metta to those people or my family. So there was all this spontaneous connections being made at other times. You know, some dear friends one at a time. And then you bring in neutral people or a neutral person who is someone that you have neither a strong attachment to nor a strong sense of struggle with. And of course, what happens when you bring in a neutral person, can anybody guess? They don't stay neutral very long, mm-hmm. Right? You're wishing them loving kindness, you know. As soon as the little fairy person showed up and started stroking the neutral person's cheek, he wasn't neutral anymore. You know, I went into my teachers and said, the not so neutral person, you know. Then you do difficult people or people that, you know, annoy you at one end of the spectrum, or people who have harmed you, maybe harmed you greatly at the other end of the spectrum. And that necessitates bringing in a sense of forgiveness, which can also be, you know, amazingly powerful. But you're instructed to not go to the most difficult person in your life straight off. You know, you start with someone who is a little bit irritating, which, you know, some of my friends are in that category. And so it was interesting to be wishing loving kindness to someone that I know I love very much, and still their irritating qualities were coming up. And so could I connect with a sense of warmth to them or forgiveness for those qualities and so on. And then you get to the category of all beings. And there are many different ways to do that. You know, there's, oh my God, that's where things get really creative. You're like, may everybody in Africa be happy, safe, peaceful, and free. May everybody in South America, may everybody in Europe, everybody in Alaska. I mean, you can do it geographically. You can do it in the directions. east, west, north, south, above and below. You can do it for, you know, may everyone who is giving a Dharma talk right now be safe, peaceful, happy, and free. May everyone who's not giving a Dharma talk right now. So very simple ways of doing mutually exclusive categories which encompass the whole world. One day it was, may all lizards be happy, safe, peaceful, and free. May all beings who aren't lizards be happy, safe. But just a little bit more about all beings. All beings are really challenging because, I mean, in some ways it's really fun, as I've described, but it can be overwhelming. It's like, you know, you realize that there are innumerable all beings out there, and how can I, as this limited little human being, possibly generate enough love to reach everybody, you know? And so I, at one point, I was kind of envisioning my heart being like a lighthouse, you know, beaming around in a circle with a beam of light going out that was these wishes of loving kindness. But what happened with me as the Tinkerbell being was that I had an image of, early on in the retreat, of tending to my own heart, you know, polishing it and loving it and really being tender with this huge heart. And then later on, when I got to all beings and I was, you know, working with how to send loving kindness out, the Tinkerbell creature was sitting on top of my heart and happily deconstructing it and throwing it out as dandelion fluff in all directions. And I, you know, that was nice. It was like, okay. I wasn't doing loving kindness just for its own sake. I was doing it as a vehicle to become concentrated. Which I'm not going to talk about tonight so much because the loving kindness practice all by itself was so strong. Loving kindness practice brings tremendous happiness and tremendous joy. Those of you who have practiced it, will, you know, I'm sure can relate to that. When you are sincerely wishing for someone's well-being, it just brings tremendous happiness. Now, in the case of the practice that I was doing, that happiness really fed into allowing me to become more and more concentrated. But all by itself, it allows the heart's capacity to grow, to be able to reach a little further, and to be able to let the practice, let the sense of love just keep unfolding in wider and wider circles. So I found that my heart would open again and again for the same being, like for the benefactor. There were, I don't know how many times, you know, I had a big sense of just overwhelming love for this person and tremendous joy at wanting this person to have well-being. So it can happen again and again for the same being at deeper and deeper levels. It can happen again and again for oneself at deeper and deeper levels. And then it can, you know, it can start to transfer and happen more spontaneously for other beings as well. You know, if any of you have been to Spirit Rock, you know that the animals there are all over the place and quite, you know, they're in it for the loving kindness. they are, you know, they are hanging out there because they're surfing on the good wishes that are being sent to them. Several times I've had lizards just like come along a bench and hop on my leg and look at me, and hop to my other leg and look at me again. And keep, I mean, that never, you know, that doesn't happen at home. It just doesn't. The lizards all run away from me at home. And so you just, you know, you start to connect with all beings through all of these different creatures. And it's really amazing. One of the things that happened one day was some deer were coming up the trail, and this one deer in particular who was pregnant just kept coming up the trail, and I was coming down the trail, and I was moving very slowly anyway, so I just stopped. And I was doing loving kindness phrases for myself, and then I started doing it for her, and there were a few other deer around for all of them. And I just stood there, and she kept coming. And she was grazing and moving up the trail, and she got to within about, she got to within 10 feet of me. And she would stop and look at me in the eye and go back to grazing and stop and look and go back. And she finally kind of went off to the side but came up parallel to me, completely turned her back on me, and kept grazing. You know, that phrase, may I be safe, it suddenly switched from meaning just may I be safe in my own being to may I be a source of safety for the other beings around me. Because it was very clear that she in particular, the other deer had not come so close, they had kind of shied off a little bit, but that she in particular considered me to not be a threat. And, you know, that was another, like, big, big heart opening. So there were lots of them. But these heart openings would happen again and again for the same being or for different beings on deeper and deeper levels with great clarity of the state of mind and heart that was present at that time. So a really nice side benefit of the practice is that the mind becomes more and more contented with the practice. There's no more need for any external entertainment. I mean, I had, you know, Tinkerbell showing up on a regular basis. I mean, what more do you need? But truly, you know, you're in a state of being really, really open and really happy. And that allows this great sense of well-being and contentedness with just how things are. And in many ways, it was not an easy retreat. My body was not working so well all the time. I was really tired a lot, really. I felt incredibly fatigued at the beginning and into the middle of the retreat. So those parts weren't easy. The contentment that came with the loving kindness practice was really all encompassing. Now, there were difficulties. There was resistance to the practice, like, oh my God, do I have to say these phrases, you know, for the rest of this month? How can I? And then it'd be like, yeah, okay, I can do that. So there was resistance, there was doubt. I had started out intending to use the breath as my object of concentration. And the fact that I had then switched programs to this other practice, you know, about 2.5 weeks into the retreat, it was like, oh, I'm wasting my time. I'm never going to get concentrated. So there were these, you know, big doubts coming up. And then I would have to go, you know, so what? You know, the heart work here is unfolding so much more than I ever imagined that I need to not worry about whether or not I'm ever going to get any concentration out of this practice or not. You know, it didn't just unfold on its own. It required some work. It required using the beings that were easy, like the benefactor or to some degree myself, going back and forth between those and the ones who were harder, like a difficult person or like, you know, some of the aspects of trying to open to the overwhelm of all beings. So I would go back and forth between those. Sometimes I would try to not have expectations. So if I was working with a person who was difficult and I could feel a sense of warmth and care for that person, that might have to be enough. It wasn't like I was going to have the huge heart opening that I had with the benefactor, say. So I was kind of allowing it to unfold without struggling with it as much as possible. And it required knowing that, you know, it's really easy to start over-efforting. And I would find myself being pretty happy and the practice going pretty well and just knowing I was reaching for something more, you know. And you finally start to feel that in your body and the sense of ease goes away. So then it's like, okay, it's time to go take a walk. Time to go do metta for all lizards for a while and not, you know, and hold it in a much lighter way. Or just go for a walk and just with each step, may I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be happy. May I be free. And not have to make a big deal out of it in a certain way. One of the things that makes it hardest to do this practice is that you are trying to generate the actual feel of love. And, of course, that comes and goes, right? The heart opens and closes again. So to kind of relax around whether or not that was always present and then to come back and send the loving kindness to myself again when it wasn't present. Just allow that to be okay. Okay. One of the insights that came very early on is I was saying these four phrases, and I was trying, the instruction to me had been, you know, do this every waking minute. So when you're walking to the bathroom, be doing your phrases for loving kindness. When you're doing dishes, I was a pot washer in the kitchen, be doing your phrases for loving kindness. Keep switching back and forth in time chunks, like 10 or 15 minutes, for yourself and the benefactor. And, you know, as much as possible, keep them going. So I was doing that, and I was trying to be really, really rigorous with that. And about, I don't know, 4 or 5 days into the retreat, I woke up one morning, and there was the awareness of coming awake, and there was the phrase, may I be safe, may I be peaceful, you know, may I be happy, may I be free. There was no intention to, it's like, oh, I should start saying the phrases. They were automatically there. And I was like, wow, the mind is so flexible. To me, that was pretty quick conditioning to be built up, so that became the sort of default of where my mind went when it wasn't asleep.
How long was that, I'm sorry?
About 5 days.
Is it still that way?
No, it's not. No, I have to think about it now.
Okay.
Although it is a pretty commonly occurring default when I notice that my mind is not happy. You know, or when I notice that I'm impatient, or it's like, okay, I'm standing in line at the mail, at the post office. It's a long line. I'm going to be here. I'm, you know, calculating. There's 3 people, and there's 15 people in line, and the transactions are taking an average of 3 minutes. So if I do the math, I'm going to be here for 20 minutes, and there's nothing else I can really do. I mean, I could surf on my phone, but you know. So what am I going to do? I'm going to, okay, maybe safe, maybe peaceful, maybe happy. And I just start doing that, you know, and it completely changes the attitude. And then when I get up to the person, well, I actually go to this one post office, which I will recommend to you all, in Oakland, the one on High Street. For some reason, those employees seem to be really friendly. It's a nice place to go. So I don't know. Maybe I'm picking up on that too. But anyway, so there's no more. Oh, what am I going to do with my mind while I have to do some really boring task that's got a lot of drudgery involved in it? Yeah, it's interesting how that can work. But no, it's not automatic anymore. It's not like I wake up and they're just going. You know, that's the other thing. When you then stop an intensive practice, some of those effects drop off. So you get to see the conditioning of the mind in both directions. You know, the little fairy being that was the image that came up of myself when I was being in a really loving state toward others. One way that I thought of her is as a deva, which is a class of beings in the Buddhist cosmology that are, these beings are, they're kind of in a heaven realm. So they have all their needs met. And the deva realm is considered not such a great place to practice, because supposedly all your needs are met and you're so happy that there's not really a lot of motivation to practice. But the general mythology around the devas is that they are very happy beings. Well, you know, if I was picturing myself as a deva going around wishing loving kindness to everyone, later on, what happened was I was given a set of phrases to encompass all beings, which was, may all devas be happy, may all human beings be happy, and may all those in states of woe be happy. So that encompasses the whole Buddhist cosmology of the heaven realm, the human realm, and sort of the animal realms. And just a sidebar, the human realm is considered the most, the best one to practice, because there's the right balance between, there's enough ease that you have some capacity, some room in your life to practice, but there's enough suffering that you're still motivated to practice. Whereas the devas don't have enough motivation, and then those in the animal realms are so, or in other hell realms as they're called, are so stuck in suffering that there's very little bandwidth for practice. So the phrases I was given as one way of imagining all beings was, may all devas be safe, may all humans be safe, may all those in states of woe be safe. And when I started saying the phrases for devas, I had another really big heart opening, because I could just feel viscerally that the devas are happy because they are wishing loving kindness to others. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like, I really got it. I don't know, I got that on a certain level. It was really getting it that when beings are in a state of wanting others to be happy, it brings great well-being and happiness. The other thing is that this loving kindness practice naturally leads to a sense of letting go, and also to a greater capacity to let go. And this is getting at the core Buddhist teaching of not self, or the impersonality of all existence. So that image of myself, you know, happily deconstructing my heart and tossing it out to the four winds, that came along with this thought of, oh, good, now I will always know that my heart is safe. I don't ever have to worry about it again, because I'm giving it all away. Again, I'm not walking around in that state today necessarily, but that was an image of opening into this quality of not self, which was followed in the same sitting by the realization that I would have to give up my 5-year-old at some, you know, that eventually I will need to let go of all these images I have of myself as a 5-year-old, as a 9-year-old, as a 45-year-old, as a 59-year-old. That was another way of opening to this quality of not self, that these are just images. They're just, you know, all of these things that I'm describing are all conditioned. They're not enlightenment. They're a happier conditioning of the mind, but they're still all conditioned, which is why that was such a great question that you asked, is, you know, is my mind still in that state of automatically going to loving kindness practice? No, it's not, because I'm not practicing so intensely right now. And then the realization that I have to let go of all these images of myself, all these stages of myself, was followed by some fear. Like, oh my God, I'm not going to have any heart left. You know, I'm not going to have any self left. There's nothing, there's no place to rest. There's no sense of security anymore. And fortunately, you know, I just noticed that and opened to it, and it didn't last very long, because I was like, well, wait a minute, there's still a heart here. I just don't necessarily have to take it as my heart. You know, I don't have to see it as being just my heart. It's everybody's heart. And one of the teachers had this great line at the end of one of his Dharma talks. He said, you know, maybe we're all like one heart poured into different vessels, which I just love that. So I view loving kindness practice now as a little bit differently. I mean, you know, it wasn't, as I said before, it wasn't like I felt like I was done with it per se, but now I view it as being completely open-ended. And that makes really good sense. It's like, you know, if it's a living practice, then it will keep adapting and changing to the object that is being considered at any given time. It will keep unfolding and blossoming toward different beings. And that, you know, that huge and somewhat overwhelming category of all beings will keep taking on different manifestation. Yeah. So it can just keep unfolding. So I'm going to read another poem now. This is also Hafiz. I love the title of it. It's called I Cherish Your Ears. Dear pilgrim, I love your shoes, your coat, your pants, your hat, your furry head, your cup, your bowl, your messy closets. And most of all, I cherish your cute ears. Why? Don't ask. Just speak what you love about me. Come closer if you are feeling a little timid today or dense, because surely you would find something very endearing about Hafiz. Then we can pass many years talking so silly, like two highly advanced yogis, like two emancipated holy vagrants who are sharing God's bottle of truth and feeling so damn good and drunk and free.